Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hey, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. John Montgomery with you. Joined as always by, I like calling you the Thunder from Down Under.
Really? Okay. Because that's like on a billboard as we go into Vegas, and it kind of means something completely different.
I just see my family in Colorado. That's why I think it was in the forefront of my mind. How's it going, my friend?
Good. Here in week 10. This is the end of term.
So I'm laughing because it's such a feeling of accomplishment in week 10. It's like the end of the term. You've got break week coming up, but behind the scenes, there's a lot going on getting ready for the next term.
Yeah, this is true, yeah.
It's like, I'd like to say, yeah, what a great term. Let's relax for a couple of weeks before we dive into the next term. But I think it actually really has been a good term. Lots of very cool courses. I really enjoyed Ron's course on Newt course, as well as the last in our three-part series in digital map painting, our plan structure, and actually just a lot of the courses are really great this term, I feel.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But, sorry, go on.
I was actually even going to give you a shout out on some of the background stuff. I think it was kind of cool how you were able to address some of the feedback from members. I think you may have posted very early in the term or even before the start of the term with last term members. I can't remember if that's the case, but with any insights or thoughts they had, and actually dovetailed really nicely into doing stuff for background.
Yeah, it worked out really well because as people put in their requests, we then fed that into our agenda for, say, SIDGraph. It was much easier in last term to accomplish that because we knew that we had time to, you know, so if somebody said, I'd really like you to look at this bit of tech, we'd be like, okay. And then we'd contact them and sort that out, and we'd be in all together in Vancouver, so it was we could then record stuff. And we'd still have more of that to come. In fact, there's just a really, really cool thing that I'm working on right now for next term's background, which comes out of a request for something like that. So we're getting, we've been on to the equipment guys. I'm not going to say necessarily who it is just yet, but they're going to be shipping us stuff out here to the Sydney office, and we're going to be doing some really awesome kind of animation, kind of capture-y stuff. So hopefully that's all going to pan out. But as of this morning, it all sounded very positive. Everyone's committed onto it. And that'll, again, be feeding into background fundamentals for next time.
Yeah, and again, those of you who have been in FX PhD before, probably just a good time to kind of go through some of the end of term notes, I guess you could say. Thankfully, this term, as we mentioned in our previous podcast, everyone's been really great about getting the materials in on time and no major delays of any kind in class prep this term. But as far as the new term, we'll be announcing it once again on the 1st, October 1st. And then auto renewals will happen several days after that. And again, as you've been members in the past, know we have auto renewal because many of you actually go term over term over term. Mike and I were just actually discussing that before the podcast. But if you want to take a break or you have a question about whether you want to join the term and kind of want to wait a bit, basically go ahead and go to fxphd.com/auto-renew and set your setting now. It's over. I'm just looking now. I can't remember where it is because I generally don't have to worry about changing it. It's actually the top. It's actually the top item on the list under edit options. So there's a line item that says renew your membership automatically before each term. If you have that checked, yes. Debbie, who basically runs things from a billing perspective and handles things from a business perspective for our members, will just put a request in, charging the same credit card that you used before, or whether you use PayPal or something like that, and you'll be automatically renewed for the new term.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's exciting when the term finishes up. The thing I should also, I guess, we should run through, John, is that if you aren't at week 10 in terms of, like, you've got a bit behind on a couple of sort of courses, don't worry, everything isn't going to cut off, and nor is your VPM going to cut off. We actually design things so that it runs over. So if you are, you know, maybe something came up by a job, hopefully, that caused you to get slightly behind in stuff in the term. It's not going to all end as of like next week if you're new to PhD. If you're not, you'll know that we do run stuff into next term insofar as you have access to stuff from this term. Doesn't mean you get access to everything from next term if you're not a member, but yeah, we don't sort of cut you off at the knees.
Yeah, and it's somewhat something we've made a change. Maybe I know many of you are new this term or returning members who've been away for a while. We've actually made it so that basically we used to kind of say you have access to your download materials for a year, but for all intents and purposes, you've got at least the last 4 years worth of your downloads available. If you go to your downloads page under the Choose Term pop-up, you'll see all your terms in there and you'll have access to your classes. So if you lost something, the dog ate your hard drive. I don't think that's actually really good. Analogy. If you can't find your material, you have access to those. The VPN, you'll have access. Our members who are members of the July term will have access to the VPN through November 15th, which is 45 days after the quote official end of the July term, at which point you lose that. One of the reasons we do that is just our agreements with the software manufacturers. They basically want the people taking the courses and learning as an exchange for having the licenses available for you. So that does actually go away after 45 days. And then you'll be able to post in the forums for at least 45 days after the term as well. So at least in the July term forums, you'll be able to still post. Answers might be a little slower because the profs maybe aren't as around as much to answer those questions, but we do leave them open for discussion for those of you who, as Mike said, are maybe a bit behind.
Now, in your download section, John, will you actually have a full copy of Songs of Innocence by U2 as well?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, we have decided to add that to everyone's schedule, like right. it or not.
That'll automatically download?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So that and also a bit of Liberace as well.
Oh, good.
Because I know you're a big fan.
Well, between that and Tony Bennett, sure.
Gordon Lightfoot. It was Gordon Lightfoot, I think, was the one I heard today from someone else. Yeah, boy, what a shitstorm that was, huh?
I like the album. I think it's really good. I'd really like the album.
I think it was necessarily not a hugely well-thought-out process, let's just say. But I think my thing is, I think we're just in a state of where it's really easy to get incredibly worked up over things in the online medium and Twitter nowadays. And it... You know, it's just sometimes the perspective and how that what that problem is just spins way out of control.
Oh my God! Yes,
I feel like you know there was more hand wringing about that than there is about the NSA surveillance
or the Ebola virus
or the Ebola, right?
The ending of the United Kingdom or
And I'm not saying it was a bad idea. It was not handled correctly. Not saying any of that. I actually think it was handled pretty poorly by Apple, but oh my God, let's pay attention to some things that really need fixing.
I mean, my biggest problem is that I don't like that you give me a free album. I mean, hello, yeah, well, first world problem. Yeah, there's exactly. No polar ice caps, but yeah, I got this free album from you too, you bastards. I'm sorry. Yeah, you know what? It's really funny for me is, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to say this. Some of the people that were doing that complaining about getting the free album are the people that, you know, download music for free on the net. It's like, really? You're going to complain about them giving you a free album and you're like violating copyright and downloading other stuff for free and not paying for it. Yeah, I think you got it.
And even many of those people complaining about downloading, actually, it wasn't downloaded to their phone. They didn't have Syncing on. It was in the cloud and it showed as a purchase. But anyway, I digress. We've already wasted... As I think I posted something on Facebook, I've already wasted more time than I should thinking and talking about it. So, anyway.
Hey, anywho. So Ion Software, now Blackmagic Ion Software design thing. What the heck is that about? I didn't see that one coming. Did you? Fusion Blackmagic?
Your tweet cracked me up. Yours was the first that I saw because... I sit in bed and read tweets from you in the morning. I was reading my Twitter feed in the morning. I was reading my Twitter feed in the morning. And yeah, because of, I think, the timing of Amsterdam and when I went to bed, that was one of the first new tweets in my feed that day. So yours was, I think, was like, wow, what? I did not see that one. Or, that's pretty surprising. But very interesting, you know? I mean, little by little... Blackmagic is reaching out and grabbing parts of the industry and software, you know, with Resolve and cameras and routing equipment, things like that. And this does kind of fit into a natural extension of that. And, you know, the thing is, when you, Mr. Grant Petty puts his mind to something, I wouldn't count count against them.
The only thing I'd say is that the DaVinci Access purchase seemed like access to the hardware and the software, and then it became more just about the software. But there's no hardware component to this, right? And I just think of Blackmagic as more of a hardware company. It feels to me much more like an Apple, not Apple as in the whole of the corporate ethos, not as an Apple as in terms of design focus, but Apple in terms of what we really love most is shipping hardware. And if software helps us do that, then we'll do it. Except for Ion. Ion doesn't fit into that discussion at all. Ion's a pure software play. And so, I mean, it's not like they sell PCs or, you know, not that it runs on the, you know, like it's just kind of like, what, Mac, what, thing, what? I don't understand this at all. And I'm not, I guess the only thing I can think of is that it's going to somehow merge with DaVinci. But even that, I understand from back channels, isn't, you know, what's happening at the moment. Internally, inside the structures, it's not like it's the same people. It's not like it's suddenly under the guy who's in charge of DaVinci is in charge of Ion. That's not the case from what I understand. And I've got no, you know, particularly good angle on this, but that's what I'm hearing. So just, yeah, it's really, really kind of a surprise to me.
Yeah, though, I mean, it's interesting. Some of the stuff that they've been working on with it at Ion with Generation back in the day, some of the tracking of that, and then some of the 4K and HFR stuff that they've been doing with Douglas Trumbull, they seem actually to be fairly aggressive or fairly progressive, I should say, Ion does, in supporting various camera formats and things like that. But yeah, I agree with you, and it's not quite as a tight fit as a Resolve to me that makes sense. But again, I just, it's, I, you know, when he puts his mind to something, when he has a will, seems to make things happen.
Yeah, and it wasn't like that was the only thing that happened at IBC that was amazing. You know, like we got Sony going hell for leather on these 4K small cameras, like under 10 grand. That's interesting.
Yeah, very much so. It's really, really crazy. So it's interesting. It seems like IBC has really had in the last couple of years some interesting announcements.
It's kind of a surprise,
Adobe has used
it.
As their kind of midterm platform to release things. You know, they do the one kind of NAB time frame, they do one in the fall, and they've been using that as a platform as well. And of course, Flame, we had the release about the extension 2 or extension 2 of Flame as well. Yeah, it still seems to be holding its own, I think, as a trade show.
So what did they release at IBC, Adobe? Like, what was that?
Well, they didn't actually release anything. They actually announced what was coming next in the next version of their Creative Cloud apps. They have kind of a new, I guess, unified UI amongst the applications. There's a little bit of there's gray and some blue and teal colors. But there's some interesting. There's some interesting stuff like SpeedGrade. Like the folks at SpeedGrade had been reticent to put in curves over the years. For years, but now they actually have familiar curve adjustments, like, you know, people who are used to using the Adobe products might find. What else? Premiere Pro, there's actually some GoPro Cineform support.
Right, I did see that.
Pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, obviously, I mean, so many commercials jobs I know, and probably other jobs actually have GoPro footage as part of them. I can't think of any kind of, especially any kind of action or car style commercial that I don't hear from editors getting GoPro footage from. It also seems like some stuff with some stuff in Premiere that seems better working with larger projects, I think, just data organization and things like that. And I think that writing has been kind of on the wall. We've seen in the last several releases of Premiere Pro that they're really targeting larger installations, or maybe, you know, not just Final Cut replacements, but Avid replacements. So interesting stuff overall. And again, I think kind of a solid midterm update, so to speak.
Also kind of interesting to me, and I tweeted about this on my Twitter feed, which if you don't follow is Mike Seymour. $2.15 billion loss by our friends at Sony. Which is like quite a lot of money to lose down the back of the couch.
Yeah, it is. What's the story behind that? Is that their main electronics division?
Actually, it's an interesting thing from an accounting point of view, because the Sony loss is not actually that in actual dollars. Like, you don't have $2.5 billion that's gone down the back of the sofa. What you've got is a bunch of money that went down the back of the sofa, but then they've had a huge write-down on their mobile. So a write-down is a loss. It's just not a actual cash-out in the bank kind of loss. The mobile communications segment had this huge write-down of what its value is. So that,
okay.
Obviously, if you've got something that has less value, you've lost money, right? I mean, if it was an investment in a company and the company was now worth a fraction of what it was before, you know, you've lost the money. So they have actually had a big decrease in operating revenue and sort of profit. But that's not what we're talking about here. Now, I guess for some people, they'd say, oh, well, that's not real money then. Well, it kind of is. And it's certainly not insignificant. But yeah, it's not just... like, I think Sony's market valuation is something like $14 billion, some number like that.
Right.
Off the top of my head. So if you lose a couple of billion off 14, that's really, really significant, right? Like, I mean, people, mm-hmm. lots of people lose their jobs on that kind of numbers. But yeah, a lot of the actual dollar value came, like, I'm going to say about a fifth of that is off the top of my head in terms of actual kind of lack of revenue type loss as opposed to a write down kind of loss. So it wasn't healthy. It's not quite the same as what that would imply. Nevertheless, at the same time that they're doing that, it's what, 2.5 was it or something thereabouts that we saw being spent by Microsoft on
Minecraft. Yeah,
some similar number, right? Yeah, I think it's 2.5 billion on Minecraft. Now, I have to say, for my money, Minecraft is a lot better value for money than Oculus Rift. I'm not saying Oculus Rift is bad. It's just that I wouldn't have dropped $2 billion on Oculus Rift. Minecraft at least seems a little more... I don't know. What do you think?
I'm with you. Yes. At least in this point in time. It's really kind of redefined in many ways how people think of games.
Yeah. And it's important for Microsoft to have something happening. And it's not as if Microsoft has no interest in gaming right now. So there's not like a complete lack of whatever. But Microsoft needs to get more young kind of users. There's obviously huge problems with Windows Phone. And so, you know, Minecraft is a good way into a bunch of other things. It's obviously very, very popular. There's a ton of reasons why that's not a dead-end proposition. So I think it's still a hell of a lot of money, it's a lot less surprising to me than the acquisition, or huge acquisition, I should say, of Oculus Rift for a couple of $1 billion, which was just like had me floored. As did, I've got to say, Instagram for $1 billion before that.
Yeah, pretty stunning. It's like just one of those cases. I think like Facebook has some money to spend, guess, or something like that, because I don't see the value of either of those being what Minecraft is.
I mean, Microsoft has a real problem at a couple of levels, and one of the ones that I think is really interesting from our member's point of view is because of the sheer lack of serious stock movement, Microsoft has lost the capacity to attract a lot of its best and brightest scientists, as it were, on stock options. Like, one of the things that you sort of get in Silicon Valley, if you're really hot, is stock options, and stock options therefore give you some real upside potential on a company. And so you'd obviously joined Google, or even for that matter Apple, when they were down at like $11, and you got stock options to buy stock at say $12. It was going to cost you $1 to buy a $12 share, and you pocket the change, which is to say you make $11 for every one of those options. If you buy stock options, or sorry, get given stock options at $11 and the share goes to $100, well, then clearly, you know, you can buy at $11, sell it at $100, and you're making $89, and you are making millionaires overnight. And we just haven't seen a lot of movement in the share price from Microsoft over the last, decade, I'm going to say. If you go like on a kind of a 5-year average, it has gone up, but it's gone from like the 30s to like the low, maybe high 40s. It's just not the kind of thing that makes billionaires. In the same 5-year period, a lot of other tech companies have gone crazy. And that really affects your ability to attract a lot of really, really cool people. I mean, if you can't be seen as an innovative company, and you can't do stock options, and you can't do, you know, like the make and break of stuff, then it becomes a bit of a deal. Now, I would say the only big exception to that in terms of coolness factor has been Xbox. If I was into tech and stuff and gaming, Xbox would have attracted me to Microsoft like almost no other product could have. I certainly don't want to go to work at Microsoft on Excel spreadsheets, but maybe that's just me. What about you? Attracted by Excel spreadsheets?
No, I think the Xbox is one. But, you know, in fairness, they did have some, and I think maybe they made a concerted effort this year because I don't remember seeing their presence as much in past Seagraphs. But they did have a couple cool papers at Seagraphs from a basic research or image processing research perspective. You know, they're the ones who did that first-person hyperlapse video, that one with the visual microphone where they were actually getting that recovery of sound from video, and actually some pretty cool planar image completion, you know, filling in patching images, but able to use geometry in the scene and planar structure to actually patch them, which is pretty cool. So, but that's very different from what you're talking about and as far as the research and Windows and things like that, and that kind of tech know-how. This is more, I think many of those people were associated with universities, and MIT was, I think, or MIT was one of them. But Microsoft was mainly helped funding that research as opposed to being always, you know, just employed by Microsoft themselves.
Yeah, my comment here is less of a comment on Microsoft and more of a comment of Microsoft's ability to attract people. I mean, the Surface 1 sold, I'm going to say, about 500,000, 600,000.
Right.
At the same time, Apple sold about 15 or 16 million iPads. And so, you know, for that PhD student who's like in their late 20s, who's got some really cool, you know, tech and stuff, there's the opportunity of doing a startup. Or you go to a company where you're going to have a lot of support around you if you don't want to be entrepreneurial. And, you know, you're just not seeing it. I mean, it's just hard to attract people. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy to a certain extent. The new CEO seems to have a genuine kind of interest in changing the Microsoft culture. But I don't know, it's a hard thing. It's got so much kind of baggage, that brand. And yet, you know, as I say, in... Well, I say that in Xbox space, while I do think it's a ray of kind of sunshine in terms of being able to attract people and seem to be relevant and interesting, I didn't buy a new Xbox
One. Especially with Kinect.
Yeah, Kinect, absolutely. But I mean, I still didn't go that way. I went PS4. Right. And now you might say, well, that was a dumb move, Mike, given that Sony just lost a couple of $1 billion. But I like the tech in the PS4. What can I say? So. Actually, if anyone's listening to the show who's a member of PhD, I'm thinking of doing a VFX show on next generation games as opposed to just doing films. I don't know if you think it's a good idea or not, John, but I thought it was an experiment, we could try it. But I need some hardcore gamers to join me, and I'd love them to be PhD members. So if any PhD members are listening, I'd like to be on the podcast as a guest. I'd like to do a one-off VFX show as a bit of an experiment on... you know, looking at Destiny and a few of those other high-end games. Second Son, we've done some stories on these on FX Guide, but I would like PhD to continue to flex its curriculum and include a bit of sort of interesting, hardcore, relevant gaming stuff. And I think part of that is I would like to see us start having a critical look at some of the material that's already out there. And we're going to do that with a VFX show. So anyway, contact me, mikes@fxphd.com. If you'd member of PhD and you'd like to, you've got a microphone and happy to be on a podcast, that'd be awesome.
So I like that idea. It could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting space right now. And we've been doing, obviously, a bit of stuff in this space, but we've never actually done a VFX show, sort of looking at these things critically. And I think that would be an interesting area to look at, because I've got to say, some of the graphics in things like Destiny are amazing. Just really breathtakingly interesting.
Yeah, and that'd be a lot of fun, especially in, again, it goes to heart to a lot of stuff that actually taken a look at Seagraph in the last couple of years, and what video cards and stuff can actually get out of them in real time, and what you need to do to make that happen. So it should be fun.
And I'll be careful about this. I'm not going to be principally talking about gameplay. Like, we obviously would touch on that, but I'm not going to be doing, you know, in the same way that we look at the plot of a film, we're going to have to discuss the gameplay, but it's not going to be a review of gameplay. It's going to be a review of the graphics and the effects, as it were, the animation, the ability to do stuff. Quite a big download, that Destiny, 15, 16 gig. So there's a bunch of stuff going on there, and it's gone are the days that you had to fit it all on a CD-ROM and get that to play. But yeah, anyway, if anyone's out there, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, and if you're interested, send me an email.
Well, my friend, on that note, and considering our problems with Skype today, I need to get out of here for this week.
Ditto.
Ditto. So again, next week is a break week before the start of the term, so there'll be no This Week at FX PhD next week, but we'll be back with a vengeance to cover the new courses as part of the O Week in a couple weeks when we launch the term on October 1st.
Thanks so much, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.